Yeah. These things are just horrible. You know, nothing tastes right. Nothing smells right. Just whatever this is, it's more than likely just a bad cold. And I had chills the other night. I thought I was coming. Well, I had fever, and I thought, oh, no, don't let this become the flu. But it hasn't. It's just crummy. But I'm not whining. I'm not complaining. Because I don't know how to deal with people who complain. I never know what to say when somebody's complaining to me. You know when people complain to you and you try to talk? No, it's going to be fine. You don't care. You just don't care. No, I'm trying to. No, you don't realize how serious it is. Okay. Man, I'm just. Oh, it's got to be terrible. How can it get any? You don't have to tell me it could be that. I don't know what to say when people whine. Is that what you say? That's just it. You say, I feel you. No, I can't get away with I'm deaf, I can't hear you twice. I can get away with that. Well, that's what I'm trying to do. It's one thing. I have never developed. You know, I'm a person with tremendous empathy. I could not do this program without empathy. But I do not know. I've always believed that if people are complaining, you try to lessen whatever it is that's causing the complaining. Just try to be positive. Try to be. And if you do that, then you're accused of not appreciating the severity of whatever it is. And that translates to you don't care. And then if you recognize and acknowledge whatever the complaint is, it's just like it's a no win. So that's why I don't complain. I don't want to put people in the position of not knowing what to say to me. So I don't complain. It's not becoming anyway. But it's the one thing I've never learned how to deal with it. And I guess the objective is to let them know you care without them. I really care about that. Oh, if you did, you wouldn't have to say so. Okay. especially if you're dealing with a hypochondriac. Oh, that is the absolute, that you really, man, oh, man. So anyway, here I find myself in a circumstance where I would like to be able to detail for you why I may not be 100% today mentally, but then that would translate into me complaining and seeking an excuse. So anyway, welcome back. I checked the email during the break. Excuse me, and somebody wants to know, what is this really going on with Michael Cohen and his testimony behind closed doors today? Let me synthesize this down to what I think is happening. And the root of this is, to me, the Democrats are hapless. They, whether they believe that Trump colluded with Russia and that's why he won the election or not, they are still forced to believe in that narrative and to try to exploit it for their base, which does believe it. The thing I don't know for certain is how many of these Democrats actually do believe it versus those who are just going through the motions. But it doesn't really matter. What this business, for where it's going to end up, the Democrats are hell-bent, for whatever reason, to demonstrate that Trump colluded with Russia somehow, somewhere, some way, and that would explain why Mueller's investigation was begun, and maybe why Trump won the election. And so the specifics of Cohen's testimony today have to do with the Moscow Project. This is not the Trump Tower meeting. That's a separate entity. What Cohen is testifying to today is whether or not Trump was seeking to build a Trump Tower in Moscow and in 2016, and did he carry over the effort into 2017? Now, the fact remains, there isn't a Trump Tower in Moscow. If there was a plan to build a Trump Tower in Moscow, in cooperation with Russian real estate people, tycoons, or whatever, it didn't work because there isn't one. Now, on March 14th, the Democrats are bringing somebody in to testify about all this by the name of Felix Sater. And Felix Sater is a Russian, and he's a real estate magnate who has worked with Trump on this project. And Cohen is being asked to amend his testimony from previous occasions before congressional committees in order to set up the testimony that they expect to get from Felix Sater. The bottom line is that they're using Cohen to... Cohen is a total tool now. You understand, Cohen has to revise and say whatever they want him to say if he is to have any hope for leniency. Cohen has totally abandoned all identity. Cohen is now he's a squish. He's a pile of mush. He is totally subservient to the anti-Trump forces who are using him. He's being used to set up testimony on March 14th with this Felix Sater guy, who they hope is going to say that, yes, Trump was indeed trying to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. And thereby the Democrats then hope to be able to say, see, Trump and Russia, Trump Tower, Trump and Russia, Felix Sater, Russian connections to Putin. They are desperate to find anything. They're scraping the bottom of the barrel now. If there were a Trump Tower in Moscow, it might matter. But even then, nothing would be illegal, and they still can't prove that any of that had anything to do with Trump winning the presidency. This is why I think they're scraping the bottom of the barrel. But in large part because they have to demonstrate to their base, which is gone. Their base is literally cockamamie insane. And they themselves probably are too. I mean, the elected Democrats. They are incalculably insane. Driven to this point by their inability to stop Donald Trump, get rid of Donald Trump, defeat Donald Trump. And at each of these ventures, each of these moments when they think they finally got Trump in the crosshairs, his approval numbers go up, the economy comes up with great numbers, or something else happens to strengthen Trump's position, and it just keeps backfiring on them. All that does is fuel their resolve to go get even more or to try for even more. Which is now why Nadler is demanding 10 years of Trump's tax returns, 81 people's documents, and so forth and so on being subpoenaed. It is throw everything up against the wall and hope something sticks, and to create this illusion with the help of the media that Trump is so corrupt and so dirty and so polluted that he has no business being president, and that the Democrats are going to be the ones to reveal and unearth all of this. But they can't even prove crimes. They can't prove collusion. They can't. Anyway, so all of it is part of the recipe to begin impeachment proceedings. Now, John Brennan, the CIA director for Obama, apparently was on PMSNBC last night. Don't need the audio for this. And he said that he has no inside knowledge. He doesn't know anything. And he went on to suggest that Mueller will drop his report on Friday. And there will be indictments. And that if there are indictments of Trump family members, that Trump will then fire Mueller on the spot, thereby ending the Mueller investigation. But he doesn't know anything. He doesn't have any inside knowledge. But there he is on PMSNBC last night predicting all this. He said, well, the reason I think Friday is because that's when grand juries drop their indictments. And I don't think he would wait till next Friday because that's the Ides of March. And Brennan said, I don't even think Mueller would go that far. What? Mueller would not issue his report on the Ides of March because not even Mueller would go that far? What does that mean? Well, we're not going to, of course, take out Caesar here. We don't want any comparisons to that or that. But these people are just becoming increasingly difficult to logically follow. Now, I've heard from more than one source all week that Mueller's report may drop this week. I've heard that independently of Brennan. And the latest heads up I got, because it matters, is that it could be tomorrow. And that if it's tomorrow, that we'll get an inkling of it sometime later today. So, whatever, it's imminent. But with Brennan talking about what's in it, so Brennan's adding to it that it's going to be a report and the final indictments and of Trump family. Well, if there are Trump family, extended Trumps, he said, if there are extended Trumps indicted, why, that would result in Trump will immediately fire Mueller and that will end the investigation. But doesn't mean that Mueller will be defeated. It means Mueller will have achieved his objective and will have been fired with great honor. And all that. So much as I know about the Mueller report, there's scuttlebutt, people claim to know. We've been set up for the last 2 months, and I'm so suspicious of this. We've been set up for the last 2 months to believe that Mueller has nothing on collusion. When the media gets in unison on something, I come to expect the opposite. I know that they're acting like they're going to be disappointed, that there isn't going to be anything on collusion, anything on Russia. But that was just a smokescreen in terms of what Mueller's charge always was, because it's always been a counterintelligence investigation, not a criminal investigation. There wasn't a crime mentioned or elucidated for Mueller to track down. And collusion by itself isn't a crime anyway. So whatever it is, folks, it's just all part of the recipe for the eventual impeachment of the president. That's really all you need to know about it. And then as it drops and we get detail, and then, by the way, we may not know immediately what's in it, because it doesn't have to be made public. And that's up to the attorney general. And, you know, during his confirmation hearings, he was asked, you're going to make sure that report, when it drops, is shared with the American public, you want to make sure that it goes, oh, you bet, Senator, you bet we'll make sure that everybody knows, well, according to the aspects of the law that I have to follow and all that, you're damn right, we're going to do whatever we can within the bounds of the law, which meant I'll decide that later. Nothing you can do about it once I'm confirmed. Brief timeout. Back with more in a moment. Back to the phones we go. This is Dan in Manchester, Connecticut. Hi.
How you doing, Rush?
Just fine, sir. Thank you.
Hope you're feeling better.
I appreciate that.
You were mentioning in your opening monologue the Federal Code, Title 8, United States Code, Subsection 1182, that President Trump could invoke right now to stop this crisis at the border. And there's another federal statute that he could also invoke to stop the crisis. One reason why we have so many illegal aliens invading our country is because you have numerous state and local officials who are harboring these illegal aliens under the guise of sanctuary. And Title 8 United States Code, subsection 1324, which is titled Bringing in and Harboring Certain Aliens, has criminal penalties for people who do so. They can be fined and imprisoned for doing so. And President Trump could arrest these government officials, and that would drastically reduce the flow of illegal aliens into the country.
That's all true. Doing all of this would be real hardball. You know, the national emergency, declaring it's a different thing than the federal statute, Title 8, Section 1182F, that gives him the right to stop immigration right this minute, today, if he wants to. Shut down the border, has the legal authority to do it. Declaring a national emergency would then facilitate the use of funds from elsewhere in the budget to start building a wall. Those are two separate things. Both could be done at the same time, as well as your site on sanctuary cities. That would be, you know what I would love? I would love the day Mueller's report drops, Trump does all of this. I think that would be the biggest display of hardball Trump could employ. Mueller's report drops, here comes the speculation about what's in it, and Trump executes executive orders that the Supreme Court has recently affirmed he has the power to do, to just shut down the border while we assess the situation, then declare the emergency, start building the wall, and he would be unbeatable. That would be real hardball, and I know that Trump cares about Republican Party support for all of these things, and because that has ties to eventual impeachment and a vote in the Senate. Here's Jerry in Syracuse, been waiting a while. Thank you, Jerry. Welcome to the EIB Network. Hi.
Thank you, sir. I want to give you a new title. You are and have become the conscience of the country.
Well,
I want to compliment you on that, sir. You do a great service for all of us. The question I have, can you shed any light on what has happened to the second part of the Horowitz report that supposedly was supposed to focus on Hillary Clinton?
Yeah, you know, that's a excellent question. There's also somebody that Attorney General Sessions appointed to conduct a similar investigation, some attorney from Utah. What was his name? Haber? He's out there supposedly investigating things we haven't heard anything about. That's, you know what? As the conscience of the country, I'm going to have to look into that because there hasn't been... And I know Horowitz is still digging, and there is another report due from him at some point. I don't know exactly what the release date for it is, but it is imminent. I just don't know when.
I understand. Well, I thank you, sir. And
I realize what you're getting at here. I don't want to be the guy that pours cold water on things, but I don't know how to put this. I don't want to be pessimistic or negative. It's not my point. But I don't think an IG. We've already had one IG report on Stroke Smirk and McCabe and these guys. They're still out profiting. McCabe's still lying through his teeth and writing a book about it now, and he's still a star on CNN. And these people are immune. John Huber is that guy that supposedly is out there digging up things on the Hillary side of this that Sessions appointed. But whatever is discovered about these people, they remain stars to the American media. They remain very prominent and heroic to their side of the aisle. And there's not any shame that attaches to them. And even if they get fired and lose their jobs, somebody's paying them to do something like McCabe and writing his book. So I wouldn't put a whole lot of hope or eggs in that basket, because it doesn't seem to affect the way Washington ends up working, be it inspector general of any government agency. Look at what we learned about the IRS. And the people are still there. Lois Lerner would still be there if she wanted to be. Koskinen and these people that were weaponized by Obama. It became widely known what they did. And to half the country, or 30%, whatever it is, on the left, they were applauded. And they're living in relative comfort now with no recriminations whatsoever. It's part and parcel two-tier justice system that has emerged in the Federal Department of Justice, where it seems that there's a completely different type of justice for Democrats and as one designated from Republicans. Let's see. One more thing on the Cohen situation. I forgot to make clear what he's actually doing here in his testimony. Because when I saw this on CNN, I'm able to watch but not hear what's being talked next. And I saw that Cohen's documents that he's showing here show edits. I said, what the hell is this? So what I've been able to determine here is that Cohen is claiming in his testimony today that his documents show that somebody changed his script for his testimony about the timeline of the negotiations for the Trump Tower Moscow project. And what he's doing is implying that Trump changed the dates in the timeline, so that it would not appear that Trump was actively participating in a Trump Tower Moscow project, either as president or as a candidate. And Cohen is claiming now that he was, and that Trump edited his documents, his testimony, and forced him to lie. I think that's what Cohen was doing today, and obviously under pressure from his own lawyers and the Democrats to do it. And then that is to set up what the Democrats think is like an exclamation point testimony to all this from this guy, Felix Sater. That's coming up on March the 14th. Here's David in Boca Raton in Florida. Great to have you, sir. Hi.
Thank you. Hey, Rush. I don't think that Rand Paul is naive enough to think that if he votes against the emergency declaration that the Democrats won't use it. The Democrats are already thinking about how to use it the next time they get into power. I think that Rand Paul just likes to be seen as the voice of reason, and it's no skin off his back to vote against it right now because it's going to pass anyway. And not just that, but I think...
Well, that's that, right. So he can appear to be a man of principle with his constituency there in Kentucky.
Right. And I think that it'll make Trump look even stronger, because rather than the Senate just going along with him, he gets to override the veto. You know, he gets to veto the thing, and they can't override it. So he'll win, and people think, hey, look, you know, Trump's really standing up for us.
Well, yeah, that... Trump, I don't think, is in any danger of losing his base on any of this. That would be, you know, an icing on the cake. No, look, Trump is really... I don't think people believe that Trump is defecting or even thinking of defecting on the whole issue of immigration. The larger point here is, to me, the Republicans in the Senate anyway, and what they think they're doing. Folks, I can't emphasize enough. Now, you got Mitt Romney in there, and you know that Mitt Romney is a never-Trumper. He doesn't like Trump. I just saw there's a little session in the Oval Office moments ago. They had the videotape. A recently rescued or released prisoner from somewhere in the Middle East is being recognized and feted in the Oval Office. And Mitt Romney sitting in there, along with Lindsey Graham and some other people. And the press, by the way, was asking Trump, what do you think of the new satellite photos that show the Norks are developing a new nuclear installation? Now, I don't know what Trump said to that, but I'll guarantee you that that's one of the reasons Trump walked out of the negotiations over there. That's all it would have taken for them to learn that the Norks are going back on everything and are, in fact, building a brand new nuclear installation. Why in the hell? Hang on. This is... clear indication that North Korea was never on the up and up about any of this. And so there was no reason to stay, no reason to go through any of the motions on it. But anyway, about the Republicans in this, you get back to losing with honor. And it's the best that I can describe what seems to be the prevalent Republican attitude, that if they behave with what they consider to be honor, with what they consider to be virtue, that because of long traditions and mores and morality in America, that they are ultimately going to be rewarded for their virtue and for their honor. And honor and virtue usually is translated as the Democrats getting what they want. Republicans saying, well, what the Democrats want is reasonable and we're not going to stand in the way of it. And it oftentimes also becomes opposing their own president. Somehow there seems to be honor or the seeking of media approval or something along those lines. It's the frustrating thing. And Trump is doing what he can, I think, to have as much unity in his party behind his actions for a host of reasons, not the least of which is to have a wall of opposition to any impeachment conviction in the Senate. So there's a lot of moving parts to explain all of this. But there's no question there's an emergency. There's no question there's a crisis. There's no question that we have an invasion going on. You realize all of this is still over a measly $2.5 to $3 billion? When you stop and think what all of this is really all about, it's senseless. And a federal budget of $4 trillion and people taking a stand on all this for $2.5 billion? It's the power of whoever these donors are that want open borders. Both parties who want amnesty. It is abundantly clear that they are the ones pulling the strings. Sadly, we are out of time for our busy broadcast today, my friends. Thank you so much for being with us. Scheduled to be off tomorrow, Friday, and Monday, but you never know, depending on what Mueller does. See you whenever.